Hello and welcome to Music Works, a podcast by Polyphony Arts. We're talking about the future of the classical music industry with some great guests. Thank you for joining us. Welcome to Music Works. I'm Katie Beardsworth, your host, and today I'm joined by Naomi Pohl, the Deputy General Secretary of the Musicians Union. Thank you so much for joining me, Naomi.
No problem at all. Nice to be here.
The reason I got in touch with Naomi to ask if she would come and talk to us is because I wanted to talk about sexism and sexual harassment in the classical music industry. This came up in my life recently because a friend of mine told me about something relatively minor, but it was something that happens to her on an almost daily basis, and I got really cross about it and started Googling what could be done about it. Came across the Musicians Union Safe Space, which is as it sounds, a safe space for reporting sexual harassment and sexism in the classical music industry. And then obviously my first thought was that I wanted to talk about this on this podcast. So I'm really glad to be able to do that. So Naomi, would you like to tell us a bit about the safe space scheme and also why it's needed?
Yeah, sure. So we set up the safe space service in the wake of the Me Too movement, after the Harvey Weinstein case broke, and then there was shortly after the Kevin Spacey case at the Old Vic. And I think it became clear that, you know, we needed to have a look at the music industry and see if we had a similar problem. And I think, you know, the culture of the music industry is quite like the culture of the film industry and the other areas of the entertainment industry, in that, you know, there's quite an informal culture. I mean, I think also there's a huge power imbalance, which is one of the issues. You've got people who are, you know, entering the industry who are desperate to get famous, and that can be taken advantage of. So we decided to set up the Safe Space service really to try and get a sense of the problems there were in music and how we could address them and how we could improve the culture of the industry, and also to try and offer help and support to people. So actually the first thing we did was hold some open meetings in person. So we had one in London, and there were about 20-25 women who came, and a couple of men. And I think instantly I got a sense of, wow, you know, this is a big serious issue that we're dealing with here. You know, there's a couple of people who arrived with boxes of tissues because clearly they needed, they wanted to talk about something they hadn't really talked about before that had happened to them, that was quite personal and quite had a huge impact on them. So you know, we knew straight away it was going to be challenging, and since then we've had hundreds of reports. We've done a couple of surveys of members to get a sense of the scale of the problem, and we've tried to make some inroads in the industry as well to try and get to start to change the culture. But it's a big long-running project because you can't change the culture of an industry overnight.
Absolutely. No, it's a huge undertaking, isn't it? So you mentioned you'd had hundreds of reports. Do you feel like the take-up has been, you know, representative of the amount of the scale of the problem?
Probably not, but I think we've got a sense of the range of the issues that occur. And one of the things that really surprised me early on, because obviously your focus is on classical music, and, you know, as a Musicians Union, we've got 32,000 members who work across all genres of music, and also, you know, in the studios, in theatre, in orchestras, in teaching, gigging, in festivals. You know, it's a really wide range. And I think what struck me was that there seemed to be problems occurring in almost every area of the business. So it wasn't just featured artists in studios, like that end of the commercial music business. It was actually a problem that was occurring in the orchestral scene as well, and in colleges, and in the theatre. You know, it was clearly a really big problem. And I suppose there's a lot of similar issues that it doesn't necessarily depend on what workplace you're in. It's not different issues for different kinds of workplaces. It's actually like a just a general cultural problem.
Do you think the problem is exacerbated by the occasional nature that work can take? I mean, obviously some musicians are long-term employed in the same place all the time, but most have several workplaces or are completely freelance, or and there's quite a lot of chopping and changing and sort of occasional, you know, like the working relationships can be quite in for short periods of time, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I think one of the problems we've had in trying to tackle the issues has been the freelance nature of it. So there have been cases where we've tried to approach an engager, but because there's not an ongoing relationship between the engager and the person that the incident happened to, they don't necessarily see a responsibility for them in trying to fix the problem. Or it might be that actually they want to take responsibility, but there's no procedures and policies in place. There's no structure that in order for them to actually tackle a problem. So you also get situations where people report something that's historical, and you go to the current engager of the person who's the alleged perpetrator, and they say, well, this happened before we engaged this person. Like, at the time it happened, we didn't have any relationship with this person. So it presents a lot of barriers for trying to address the problem. And I think also there is a fear that if you report something, if you can complain, that you won't be booked again. And that is a problem that is really specific to freelancers.
There's just such a lot of like different routes into this that I want to take. But I suppose I want to ask, maybe could you talk us through what happens if somebody reports something to the Safe Space?
Yeah, so the first thing that happens if someone reports is that they'll get an automatic response from the email account, which provides a list of support services. So we got some training from Rape Crisis early on in the process, and they talked about the services that they offer. And, you know, if somebody's considering reporting to the police, they can go to Rape Crisis and actually have somebody who will support them through that process. And Rape Crisis take the view that it's absolutely for the survivor to decide whether they report to the police or not. So Rape Crisis won't try and encourage you to do that if you're not comfortable doing that. It's completely the individual choice whether they report or not, what route they take. And so we adopt the same approach. You know, if someone wants to report to us, in many cases, they actually just want to say, this has happened to me and I want you to know because I don't want this to happen to anyone else. Sometimes we're able to take action on behalf of the individual. So there's been a couple of cases where we've managed to get people out of contracts where they've been coerced into contracts. And, you know, there's some sort of toxic relationship with the person who's coerced them into that deal. And we've managed to negotiate them out of it. And there's been situations where we've had to get involved when somebody's wanted to extract themselves from a certain engagement because of somebody that, you know, has behaved inappropriately and that sort of thing. And we've also had to take disciplinary action against a member that we had a lot of complaints about, where it was MU members making complaints about another MU member. So there's been a whole range of different types of cases. So they get the email back with the list of support services. And then after that, it's usually me who gets in touch with them and I talk to them about what it is they want to achieve and how we can help and how we can support. And we always start from a position of belief. So if someone reports to us, we're 100% behind them from the start. You know, and I think a lot of people just want to be listened to and they just want to be heard. It's been quite challenging because obviously that we've had some quite awful reports of things that have happened. But generally we've had positive feedback. I think people are just glad that they got someone to talk to and somebody who understands the industry and might be able to take some action on their behalf.
Absolutely. It can feel a very lonely industry, I think, in many ways, especially sort of the more diverse and varied a freelance career can be, and spending, you know, the less time you spend in one place or with one set of people. And that's something that I see a lot in the work that I do, is the effects of not having that close network of people to confide in or discuss things with, from the minor to the major. So I think it's so important that this exists, and I'm so glad that we're able, that you've set it up and that we're able to talk about it. I can only imagine the range of things that you've had to deal with, and I'm glad that there is a mechanism for it. And I was wondering if it's okay with you to ask some more questions about, because I've worked for big organisations, and I'm just thinking back to the process if a complaint was made, that people would go through, and it would involve probably a meeting initially with somebody that they trusted, first of all. And then there'd be a procedure, and it would effectively be a grievance procedure, which has a whole load of stuff behind it anyway. And not even getting into the question of the working relationship between the parties involved and the way that the person making the complaint might feel about how that would impact their work, and so on and so forth. And that is all in the context of an organisation where ultimately you're far more protected by an HR department, and you know, it's kind of possible to separate people off into different departments. You know, there's just so much structure in place in a situation like that. And even that feels quite, you know, fraught with issues from the point of view of treating both parties fairly and compassionately, I think.
Yeah.
So if it's okay to ask a bit more. So, I mean, because I'm obviously aware that you won't be wanting to discuss individual cases or go into too much detail about confidential things. But is there anything more you can tell me about what happens if a complaint is to be made against somebody?
Yeah, well, I can say it's very different if you're an employed person or if there's a major organisation involved. For example, there's a group of women who reported to us, who also reported to an organisation that that they'd worked for, and it was very much like the standard grievance procedure. So they had to go in, and they all wrote statements. They went in and they had meetings with HR, and then if it was essentially a kind of investigation. I mean, we've got contact in the police, who's a specialist, who's been really helpful, and he said it makes him very nervous, the idea of people in an HR capacity investigating something that is essentially a police matter, because it does feel like it's like amateurs doing a bit of sleuth work. But you know, the organisation can only really look at it from that employment perspective, which is challenging. And then usually, yeah, there'll be the investigation will produce some findings, and there'll be the result will be communicated. In this particular case, the women were very unhappy with how they felt it had been handled and what the outcome was. They really didn't feel it was at all satisfactory. And then you've got the option to appeal, and then it should be heard by another independent person who'll review the process and look at what's happened, and then make a decision as to whether there needs to be a change of outcome. And then, you know, obviously if we're involved, we've got the option of trying to take some action and talk to the organisation about how they've handled it as well, and see if we can make any improvements. But it's, you know, it's rare to see something handled perfectly.
Yeah,
we've seen a lot of organisations that don't have any of those structures in place, where it is totally freelance environment, where people have really tried to do the right thing. But we've also seen situations where organisations have just tried to cover it up. And, you know, there's still the use of NDAs as well, which is, like, if it's an employment situation, and you end up leaving the employment because maybe, you know, someone called me and said that they'd made a complaint about an assault by a colleague. They still had to work with that person. So it had been investigated, but essentially, you know, he hadn't been sacked, so they still had to work together. So if the person who's complained ends up leaving the environment, quite often they'll have to sign a settlement agreement, and it'll actually have clauses in it that prevent you from talking to anyone. Sometimes they even go so far as to try and stop you talking to your family members about it. It's totally unacceptable.
Yeah, I'm quite passionate about the subject of NDAs. I think they're utterly poisonous in every way. I've seen lots of examples of them being used in ways that just make, you know, that's just completely unfair for people. There was a lot of advocacy done for this on Do You Know Pregnant Then Screwed? They advocate for, as you know, for pregnant and women's and mothers' rights, and they did a huge piece of advocacy on the subject of NDAs, I think last year or something like that, and I just found it really shocking to hear all the stories, because obviously you don't hear them because they're you know, everyone signed an NDA, so it really was quite eye-opening. So I think that is a really important kind of part of this, is the culture of not saying about things, and obviously that's really complicated because sometimes people just don't want to talk about things anyway, and sometimes they feel like they can't, or they literally legally can't because they've signed an NDA. And it's like you said before, I mean, the basic issue being that you don't want to rock the boat, otherwise you might not get hired either by that person or by somebody else who happens to kind of brand you as a troublemaker or something like that. It's just it's kind of impossible really to operate in that. So with this podcast being about the future of the classical music industry, it just is really important for me that we're able to talk about this issue that just affects so many people in the industry, and how they feel about working safely and choosing their work safely and managing their careers in a way that's about their careers and not about their gender or, you know, their history in any way. Do you feel like the service is well known? Is there something that you would like people to know about it that they don't already, to encourage them to use it more or anything like that?
Well, I'd just like people to know that it's purely confidential, you know, it very much confidential service. And, you know, our only intention is to try and improve the culture of the industry. So even if somebody doesn't really want action taken, it's still worth reporting to us, because what we're trying to do is still build up this picture of what kind of problems occur. And it all helps us to make arguments to employers and engagers that they should have procedures in place and make sure that they tackle these things and don't, you know, because we're part of the music industry. One of the barriers that I think we've faced has been, you know, don't criticize the industry. We don't want people to think the industry's bad. And it's not that the industry's bad, but it's that there are particular issues related to the music industry, like late night working and alcohol being involved if you're in a, you know, quite an informal environment at a festival or a gig or whatever, or after a concert in the pub, or if you're on tour and you're on a tour bus or staying in a hotel. All of those environments kind of lend themselves to people who want to sexually harass or sexually assault. You know, unfortunately, it's that environment where that can happen. And also that it's a very male-dominated industry. And I know with classical, there's a little bit more of a balance in the orchestras. So some of the orchestras, I'm sure, are 50-50 split. Male to female, but you still find it's a lot of the men who are in the more senior jobs, which is an issue throughout the industry, and it certainly doesn't help. I think it would help to have more females in kind of positions of power in the industry to balance it out a little bit, and that kind of thing just takes time.
Absolutely, and often you find where there are women in more senior jobs or women in more equal proportion, sometimes they've had to adapt the male-centered culture in order to achieve those positions, and that can be another thing. Not to necessarily say that, you know, in a because I run an organisation that's run by women, and some of the conversations we had we would never have in a male-centered environment, but maybe we should. But we all behave in certain ways that are what's the word I'm looking for, that are kind of brought about by culture. I think, and it can be really hard for minority groups, I think, in general, to kind of find their place within that and feel like they belong and not have to adapt to or behave in that certain way. Thinking of the politician whose name I've forgotten, who has been saying publicly recently that she won't deny her femininity to fit in with the male-centred American political, sphere.
Yeah.
So yeah, there's such a lot of work to do. So, and what do you think, because what I also wanted to ask you about was, as you've started to allude to, what the impact of this is in the on the industry and how we can shift away from this being the case, because obviously that is, as you've said, is a huge part of the reason why people would report even if they didn't want to take action as such.
Yeah, I think we really need to keep the pressure up, because I think it'd be easy for the industry to think this is a flash in the pan and they'll kind of get bored of talking about it after a while and it will just go away. But it's not going away, because we know there's a problem and we're determined to sort it out. So that's my challenge, I think, is to make sure that we keep the momentum going. And actually, I think, you know, during the COVID crisis, obviously our musicians have been in total crisis, and so the focus has really been on like getting immediate financial support for musicians. I thought the Safe Space Service would go quiet, because I thought if people aren't out there working, they're probably not getting sexually harassed. But actually, for a start, there is a certain amount of online sexual harassment that continues to go on. But also, I think we've still got reports coming in, because actually people are taking the time to reflect on things that have happened to them. So when you're not in that really busy freelance cycle of just going from one engagement straight into another, you've actually got time to reflect on things that have happened and maybe take a decision that, you know, I've been meaning to do something about this for a while, and actually I am going to make that phone call, or I am going to send that email and report something. So actually,
that's really interesting. I also feel that there is a level of reflection going on generally, not just in the music industry, about what we want the world to look like in the future and what we want to go back to. And like, my husband and I have conversations like this all the time, because he works for, you know, he does like a 9-to-5 job in an office, and at the moment he's not going in at all, and I've been freelance home working for a couple of years, and our lives and the way we manage our childcare and all this kind of thing have just become really quite different. And obviously there are things that we miss and want to be different, but there are also things, it's easy for me to say this as the freelance work from home person, but I do hope it never goes back to him in a 9-to-5 office all the time, and I think he'd probably agree with that.
Yeah.
And when you're thinking about those things, and that's a very mundane example, I think you're probably also thinking about the things that you don't want to go back to. Like, do you actually enjoy those pub visits after the concert? Are you, when someone gets in touch and goes, ah, oh, this gig that we that's been cancelled has now been postponed, does your heart sink about working with that person again? And also, I think that discontent levels are quite high as well for various reasons. And I know I found myself getting really riled up about things that otherwise I might have just brushed off or been too busy to to think about, and possibly partly why I did this research when my friend said what she said, and I thought, well, this must be something that we can fix, this is ridiculous, and went on the internet and it kind of became on the rampage to address this problem. So I'm kind of glad to hear, because that was what I was sort of hoping in a way that you would say, not that I hope, obviously I would hope that there was nothing to report, but I'm glad to hear that people are reflecting and reporting and using the service.
Yeah, it's really important that it doesn't go away. I mean, it's important that the campaign doesn't go away. Obviously, we want to see the behaviour go away. But yeah, and it's important that it doesn't go to places where it's more private and more hidden, because it's taking place online rather than in public places.
Absolutely. And we're always, often the onus is on the person who's experienced the discrimination or the assault to report, obviously, because how else could it happen? But what, and that obviously, that can't not be the case, but it is really, really hard. What can other people do? Who else is involved? How can other people be part of the solution to this?
Well, we're actually going to launch an app, a safe space app, where people can report through that. So it will be more like taking a questionnaire. So it will give us the crucial bits of information that we need. And what we're looking at actually is whether we make that available so that people who've witnessed some inappropriate behaviour or sexism can report it as well, so that the onus isn't just on the survivor, but actually everyone should be looking out for colleagues. And this is where, you know, the good guys in the industry come in to actually take action and make sure that they're supporting people who've experienced inappropriate behaviour. Also, I mean, if you do see something, it's really important that there are witnesses. So I've had some good cases where something's occurred and there's been a colleague present who's reached out and said, I'm really sorry that happened to you. That's not okay. If you want me to back you up, I'm here. And we followed up on that and we've had the person write a witness statement. And it gives an extra weight, because you say, you know, it's not just one person's word against another. Someone else witnessed this and they agree that it was inappropriate behaviour. It's really helpful. And that's, I feel like that's something we can all do.
Yeah, that's really, really powerful, isn't it? And in terms of supporting the person that it's happened to as well, it reminds me of, because there's a difference between like somebody having to say, this happened to me, does anyone agree? And somebody actually saying, I just saw that, you know, were you not okay with that? And that, weirdly, that happened to me a few years ago when somebody reversed into my car. And I was a bit like, oh, what did I do? Was that my fault? That's my initial immediate thought. I was like, did I somehow cause that? And there was a group of people walking along the street and they hung around and they just said, I watched that guy reverse into your car. And I was like, fine, phew, you know. <Yeah. laughs> And it actually just, I think probably maybe I'd have got to the right, you know, I'd have been okay in a little while and been like, yeah, no, I know what happened. But maybe I wouldn't have been. And those people seeing that made all the difference.
Yeah. And just, you know, the fact that somebody's backing you up. Yeah, unfortunately, you know, I've dealt with some heartbreaking reports where people actually say they've been sexually assaulted and they blame themselves, and it's just really chilling that people, that's your first response is, what did I do wrong to cause this? And no, you didn't do anything wrong. You know, even if you'd been drinking and all of that, it doesn't matter. None of that is your fault. You should be able to do that. It's like when people say, you know, you shouldn't walk home late at night if you're a woman, and you just, it makes me so angry, because I think I should be able to do that.
Nobody says that you shouldn't rape people. They say that you shouldn't wear short skirts and walk home in the dark.
Exactly.
No, I absolutely agree. It's there's a huge amount of like back narrative to it, I think, that we almost don't notice. It's been highlighted recently, that analogy isn't mine, that's something that I read on social media somewhere, that someone had flipped all those statements and it just said, you know, like, you should carry a key in your hand as you're walking home, flip to you shouldn't assault people, yeah. You know, and I just, yeah, so it's being highlighted by people who are passionate about changing it, but it's still very present in the general narrative of how people go about things, I think. And again, like, I think cultural change is much harder to achieve when you're dealing with a whole industry that doesn't have one workplace or one head office or one kind of set of HR or whatever that will just say, no, you can't do that anymore. So hopefully that's what this is moving towards in the sense of, you know, of accountability for these things.
Well, what's been really great as well is trade bodies reaching out. So I've had other trade bodies in the industry reach out to me and say, we've had a report, we wanted to talk to you about it, what should we do? And also I've been able to reach out to other trade bodies where I've said that we've had a report about something that's happened in a workplace that you represent. Can we talk about it?
By a trade body?
So trade body, like, you know, so I'm part of, we're part of UK Music. UK Music involves all these different trade bodies that, that represent different groups. So there's Music Managers Forum. There's all the, also the live sector, like Music Venues Trust. So knowing that we have those relationships, so we can potentially reach out to another area of the industry through the trade body and say, what can we do to try and resolve this issue? So I think there is some really good work going on, but it's going on behind the scenes.
Yeah, and you can expand it. I mean, that's a really good point, because also, I mean, you know, the issues in the music industry must be the same in the theatre industry and in the film industry and in the, you know, and then in it, and then, you know, the bigger you get, the more it becomes universal. So those kind of, I imagine those kind of connections are very useful. And also creatives work across these industries as well. So having a, you know, if you want to report something and you get a totally different response, if you go to, you know, this person rather than this person, then that's also a possible outcome, isn't it? It's a very upsetting topic to have to address in your own industry, isn't it, really? or anywhere.
And it's so wide ranging, because it's, you know, the everyday sexism element of it is quite difficult. So there's been we've had reports of people making inappropriate jokes in band rooms, or like bursting in, you know, when you've got only a couple of women in a band and it's more, there's more men, and the men are bursting in when you're changing and thinking it's hilarious. You know, it's like sort of, if you like, low level inappropriate behavior, but it's all part of the toxic culture that makes women feel uncomfortable in the workplace. And even not having access to toilets and things like that, those kind of things have come up. Like, you know, one woman told us that she'd had to go to the toilet at the side of the road because the tour bus was full of blokes, and the blokes were obviously happy to go and have a wee in the bush. But she was like, this is actually really, for a woman, this is an incredibly kind of embarrassing and uncomfortable thing to have to do around a bunch of male colleagues.
Absolutely. Does rather make assumptions, that, doesn't it? Goodness.
Yeah,
absolutely. And I do think, you know, the day-to-day sexism just it fuels the behavior, so that there's that, you know, for everyone that it is a potential assaulter, for everybody else that makes inappropriate jokes around that person, they're just refueling the idea that it's actually acceptable.
Yeah, that's it.
And it's all got an undercurrent of, oh, it's all just a joke. It's, you know, don't be like, not fun. Especially, and I think that must be a thing in the arts, you know, because obviously we're all really fun in the arts. So we couldn't possibly, you know, find something inappropriate or, you know.
Yeah. Like you say, as a woman in a male-dominated workplace, you kind of end up assimilating to the culture that's there. And so I've definitely met female musicians who've worked for a long time in a male-dominated environment, and you can tell that they've had to adapt their behaviour to fit in.
There are so many ways that you can do that as well, aren't there? I definitely see that as well.
I mean, we're seeking legislative change, so that's one of the things that we're trying to do, is actually make sure that freelancers do have better protections, and make sure that and we'd like to see the limit on making a claim to tribunal increased as well for these kind of cases, because if you're sexually harassed in the workplace, you don't always make a decision to report that straight away. It sometimes takes time. So a three-month window can be a bit tight. We would like to see it increased to at least 6 months.
Absolutely, yeah. It can also be, in cases where it kind of can build up, can't it?
Yeah.
Let's say that you had a case that you wanted to talk about with an organisation. What is the ideal response from them on being contacted and being told there's been a case made against someone that they've engaged?
Well, it depends on the circumstances, but we've definitely had people reach out in the right spirit, where you, essentially they say, well, it depends if they're reaching out to us or we're reaching out to them. But I suppose what you want them to say is, we're really sorry to hear that this happened. It's completely inappropriate. You know, what can we do? And we've got a code of practice that they could sign up to, which actually gives some practical guidance about dealing with reports. But essentially they should be keen to make sure that they can prevent it in whatever way from happening again. And we're really happy to work with organisations to try and make that happen. And there's lots of brilliant organisations out there as well. There's something called the Good Night Out campaign, which is about pubs and bars and venues, and they offer brilliant training for venues. So I think there's always good work that can be done by organisations to make sure that they are protecting people and that they take appropriate action if someone reports.
Yeah, exactly, because I think that's going back to my earlier point about wanting to make sure it's not all the focus on the people who might have experienced these things to attempt to report and to make change, what organisations can do. So essentially what you're saying is be open and respond in a way, it responds sort of sympathetically and inquisitively.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, we would always ask that people start from a position of belief if they receive a report as well, because it takes a lot of courage for somebody to report something. And if you're immediately hit with disbelief or questioning, you know, it's just not the appropriate way to respond.
Yeah, we'll never have statistics on this, but I always wonder for every report, how many non-reported incidents there must be. For so many reasons. I hope that anybody listening who has experienced anything like this, no matter how minor, will report it and know that they could do so in a way that will be open and come to it from a position of belief. And yeah. Thank you so much for coming and talking to me about this. It's been a real pleasure.
No problem. Really good. So just to flag up that the email address, if anyone does want to report to us, is safespace@vmu. So that's themu.org. And also, if you go to our website and search for sexual harassment, there's a page there with lots of useful information and advice. So that would be a first port of call for someone who wanted to contact us.
Great. We'll put that on the show notes as well.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. It was such a pleasure to talk to you.
Me too. Thanks for inviting me.
Thank you so much for listening today. To find out what we're up to, do join our mailing list or follow us on social media. And if you'd like to support the podcast by buying me a coffee, you can do that on buymeacoffee.com. Thank you so much. See you next time.